Great question. The Manufacturing Podcast offers news and information for the people who make, store, and move things, and those who manage and maintain the facilities where that work gets done. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Great Question, a Manufacturing Podcast brought to you by Endeavor Business Media. I'm Tom Wilk, the Chief Editor of Plant Services Magazine, which focuses on smart solutions for reliable operations. In today's episode, we're going to talk with a specialist in the reliability field. We're going to talk with Brian Hronchek. He's currently a principal trainer and consultant at Iridicio, and a couple of other items on Brian's CV include working as a reliability engineer for U.S. Steel, a maintenance manager for ExxonMobil, and a 16-year veteran of the Marine Corps, where at least part of his stint in the Marine Corps was as an aircraft mechanic. So, Brian, welcome to Great Question. Glad you could be here.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Yeah, it's good to be here.
So Brian and I touched base about a week and a half ago at the MarCon event at the University of Tennessee's Reliability and Maintainability Center. We got talking about FMEAs, and he was telling me a couple of occasions where he'd been with some clients, and he had been able to work with them to demystify the whole process of what an FMEA was. And for a lot of listeners, you might already be familiar with FMEAs. We know we do serve the reliability community, but Brian and I thought, hey, you know what, why not capture this conversation in podcast form and share it with everyone? So, Brian, thank you, especially for being here to talk about this topic.
Yeah, not a problem. It's just so much fun. You know, we love to see that light bulb moment when everybody or when someone realizes like, oh, it's so much easier. You know, I got it. And then it becomes functional. So excited to share this today.
Excellent. Well, let's start with FMEA 101. For those for whom this is the first time encountering this term, what is an FMEA?
So it's FMEA stands for Failure Modes and Effects Analysis. And there's a modification of the tool. This is really what we're going to talk about is the Failure Modes and Effects Criticality Analysis, or FMECA. Failure Modes and Effects Analysis is really useful for an OEM when they don't understand your operating context. But once you bring it into the operating context, then you can start to calculate or evaluate the impact on the business and determine which failure modes are more important than others. So we're gonna talk failure modes effects criticality analysis.
When teams conduct an FMEA, when they use this tool, what is the eventual output of the tool? Are they looking for a specific number, or is there a specific set of like recommended actions? What should people expect to get once they conduct this exercise?
Yeah, no, it's funny because we do so many things as reliability engineers, and somebody said we have to do this, and we do it, and then we put it on the shelf, and we get absolutely no value out of it. So remember, everything that we do has to be taken to the next step. Eventually, it has to be turned into value for the business. And the value for the business comes when people put their hands on the equipment and do something to it, right? So I hate to break this to everybody out there who has arrived at their executive position, their management position, their supervisor position. None of us have any value unless the operator and the mechanic put their hands on the machines. So the output of this is a strategy that can be turned into your maintenance plan and your CMMS.
Okay.
So that they can touch the machine.
So it's more than a diagnostic tool, but there's more work to be done once you do complete it.
Correct.
What would trigger an FMEA? Is it a machine that's constantly breaking down in a certain way? Is it something that you would do after you perform a criticality analysis?
Oh, perfect. Man, we're going to have so many light bulb moments today. I'm going to tell you right now, we're going to have so many moments that it's just like, oh, that's what that's for. Let's back up just a minute, right? The value of a reliability engineer, again, it's when hands are put on the equipment, right? So what do we start with? We start with building a hierarchy. Why? So we can do criticality. Why? So we can build an asset strategy, which includes FMEAs and, you know, PM optimization and part problem cause, all those things. Why? So we can build an equipment maintenance plan. Why? So it can be handed off to your planners to input into the CMMS so that the technicians can touch the machines in the right way at the right time, right? So there's a string of things that have to happen. But you said something, when do we use it? Is it when something breaks down a lot or not? Or is it, you know, some other sort of analysis? Let's go back to the criticality tool. And I'm going to tie together the criticality, the failure modes and effects analysis, and your root cause analysis tools. I'm going to do this real quick, right? What are the categories that are important to your business? What are they? What would they be?
Conventionally, I would think it's uptime of the machines and reducing unplanned downtime. Everyone knows the cost of a minute of unplanned downtime.
Okay, so you've got downtime, which is really associated with money, right? So we've got a money component, right? We have a safety component, and we have a customer component, right? The money component is, can we make money? And if you're not running, you can't make money, right? So we have some sort of internal process component. Then we have the safety component. If we're not safe, people aren't going to want to work here. And if they don't want to work here, we can't make money, right? And then we have the customer. You know, we do everything else right, but we insult all of our customers or turn them away. Nobody's coming to buy stuff. It doesn't matter if we can make things because nobody's going to buy it, right? So there's really three big, you know, and you feel free to challenge me on it. Maybe there's some more. But really, there's really three big categories, right? So when we look at those three big categories, money, safety, and customers, right? If we look at them from a theoretical point of view, like what potentially could be the worst thing that could happen, right? That's when we're over in criticality. We're looking at the equipment and we're saying, this equipment, what's the worst that could happen in those three categories with that piece of equipment, right? So that's how we calculate criticality, right? And people will argue that criticality might have more to do with, you know, elements of performance and things. And it's okay. If you want to include performance into criticality, that's fine. My suggestion is that let's keep this theoretical, right? Let's take those same three categories and let's look at the failure modes and effects analysis and the severity, right? We're going to come back to that in a little bit. And let's go downstream, root cause analysis. Root cause analysis is a measure of actual performance, right? So in those same three categories, money, safety, and customers, let's use those as the triggers for root cause analysis. Why would you do a root cause analysis if it doesn't affect one of those things, right?
Right.
So
right.
Criticality is a theoretical indicator of importance of an asset. Root cause analysis is a performance-based problem-solving, you know, tool. So we're going to say, well, but actually this one's causing us the most problems right now. Let's fix that one. And once you fix it, it's good.
Okay. Right?
Okay. Yeah. So coming back to your question, when to use failure modes and effects analysis, once you've done that criticality and you figure out which one theoretically, you know, which of your assets is at the top of that list, those are the ones that you want to throw the most money at, the most time at, because if they go down, it costs you the most. So you're going to pick a top tier in your criticality and say, we're willing to spend more time on this, more money on this. Let's do failure modes and effects criticality analysis on those top assets. Everything below that, there will be different tiers and different strategies on the way down. But let's take those top tiers of the theoretical importance of that asset, and let's put those assets through failure modes and effects analysis.
Do you find that plants, when they do implement these strategies, Brian, are they in reactive mode generally, where they're like, oh yeah, that thing keeps breaking down, so we'll do an FMEA? Or do you get a sense that it's the maturity is sort of all over the board, where some people do it reactive, some people do it more proactive?
Yeah, I think it's difficult to find a couple of different places where you can get the same understanding of what it's for and when it's used. Right? So everybody's going to tell you something different, or it's something that somebody said we should do. It helps, but they don't really know how. So they're going to do an FMEA and then it goes on the shelf. You know, we've seen that before. So there is a lot of difference in understanding, and that's what really we want to do, is break it down into a way that's simple. So you understand, oh, this is this part of, this is this step, and it leads to that step. And eventually it leads to, you know, something else. So we've seen it used reactively. We've seen it used proactively and never reaches its end goal. And we've seen it used right sometimes.
Well, and for someone who's never seen one before, if they were to look at the conclusion section of an FMEA or the final bit, what would they see? And I understand there's an RPN number usually, there's a bunch of recommended actions. What core data do you want to get there so you can move to the next step in the plan, which is like an equipment maintenance plan or an RCA?
Right. So you're trying to get to build an equipment maintenance plan. So as you're looking at each one of these failure modes and everything associated with it, the functional failure, the criticality, RPN score, And then the recommended actions, you're going to summarize all those recommended actions into the equipment maintenance plan document. And it's going to be partially complete at that point because it's going to have the recommended actions. You still need a planner to say, hey, the recommended action is do a monthly inspection on the tread depth on my tires, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you still have to add what technical skill, what's your craft, how many hours, is there any other equipment that's going to be involved, and is there any consumable parts that are going to be used? Because that equipment maintenance plan is a document that will either, it goes two different directions. It's either going to turn into, and I won't say it goes both directions actually, it will turn into your CMMS PM plan and PM schedule, and it will communicate to all your bosses the real cost of keeping your equipment running the way that they keep telling you it has to, right?
Okay. So what do you do with the FMEA once it's complete? Do you keep these in a library like a job plan? Do you revisit it once a year? Who should see these things in the plant?
Right. So yeah, it's useless by itself. It's only useful based on the outputs and getting closer to putting your hands on the equipment, right?
Okay.
So you can keep it. So go through the failure modes and effects analysis, FMECA, go through that. And once you turn that into your equipment maintenance plan, store it away. Keep it for reference later, right? There's going to be times when your strategy has to change. There's going to be times when the business changes, the market explodes, and now you have to do more with less, or the market shrinks, or the competition changes something, or something happens and it affects the criticality of your equipment, which means you have to come back and redo your FMEA. Now, the goal of keeping criticality as a theoretical measure of your business, money, safety, customers, is so that it doesn't change very much, right? If it's based on performance, it might swing up and down as you fix things and, you know, take things away or whatever. So keep it, you know, theoretical. And again, that's my recommendation. A lot of people will disagree, and that's okay. But you keep it theoretical so that you don't have to come back to this very often. But when you do come back to it, that record is there, right? Okay. You have a better starting point because you're starting from, man, we've put all this hours into it. Here it is. What needs to be modified? Well, you know what? Our particular asset, the business changed, which is going to bring our severity of, if this goes down, the severity is coming down. Well, that drops it much further out of, you know, maybe we don't have to do PDM on this anymore. We can save a little money. It's just not that important anymore. Or the opposite. And we come back and we realize that something now is super critical because the company just sold the other asset that was the backup. Now what do we do? Oh, we got to maintain this a whole lot different now. This cannot fail, you know?
Okay.
So there's times to come back, but generally just keep it in the folder, keep it saved, come back to it later. But the real value is in those documents, you know, downstream.
Okay. You know, it's something I've always wondered too, not ever having worked as a reliability engineer myself, when it comes to FMEA libraries in a given facility, are FMEAs at a facility specific to that one location where you wouldn't want to borrow FMEAs for the same equipment from other plants? Or is it the case where you can take a look at other FMEA libraries if they're out there and sort of either get a starting place? I don't know how much the actual uniqueness of the location can change the way the outputs of the FMEAs.
Right. It can totally change it. Right. So the FMEA, and again, let's clarify, let's go back and quit being generic. So the FMEA, sure, which could be provided by an OEM, is generic.
Okay.
A motor can fail these different ways. Right.
Right.
So you can provide an FMEA and send it out to everybody and say, hey, this is the FMEA for a motor. Perfect. Great. Everybody has that. But when you add that criticality to it, you're adding the context to it. So a motor that drives a pump that is the single point of failure for, let's say, a refining or a production process, right? So it's like this pump takes this from here to there. That is the only line that moves that oil to that location. If that thing fails, that oil stops moving, right?
Mm-hmm.
Versus that exact same motor, exact same model size that is in a pump bank of 20 different motors and pumps, and where you only need 10 of them running at a time in order to move your hydraulic fluid, right? They both have the same ways they can fail, but one of them, you can let it burn to the ground and write a work order and replace it. The other one, if it goes down, it stops production everywhere.
Okay.
Right? No, so how I handle that is going to be different. That one is going to get all of my predictive technologies, all of my inspections, everything. The other one, I may just decide to run it to failure. Just, hey, when it dies, write it up. We'll replace it. It's not a big deal. We got 19 other pumps to do what only 10 pumps need to do, 10 motors. So it's
okay.
Fine.
You've really captured for me the difference between a generic FME that comes down from someone like an OEM, yeah, and then what happens at the facility. You see a lot of people in the field. How many plants, just a thumbnail percentage, would you say are at the maturity where they got a handle on this kind of stuff and they've got a strategy in place, which includes criticality analysis and FMEAs?
Right. It's hard to find them. And I can't tell you that I've ever seen one myself, with the exception of the military experience. If anybody out there wants to know why a F-18 costs so much, it's because we buy the FMEAs, we buy the maintenance plans, we buy the updates to the maintenance plans, we buy somebody to sit on the other side and continue to keep these things updated and keep our pubs updated. And you have to take the book with you to do, the job on the aircraft. So there's a lot that goes into that where our procurement, they're like, oh, cool, let's buy this asset. We don't need the maintenance plan. We don't need the FMEAs. Now, those are just added expenses. We got good people to do that stuff. It's fine, right? And so they chop those costs out of it. So you get it at a discount. And then you realize, oh, my God, we got this at a discount, right? So it causes some frustration. But that's, out here in the industry, it's really hard to find it where it currently exists. And we want to help people build that. And we do, but finding that maturity right now, it's a struggle.
Well, it goes back to that issue of there's such a gap in available people who can do the jobs themselves. I mean, that sometimes strategy may seem like a luxury, but in the end, my feeling is that if you can do it, you got to do it because it's going to cost you more in the long term.
Yeah. The life cycle costing is a real thing. Pay less up front, you're going to pay for it later.
One last question for you. Given that artificial intelligences like ChatGPT, the generative AIs, are helping plants save time by at least getting a start on a rough draft of things like a equipment maintenance plan, how do you see tools like that affecting the ability of people to do this whole sequence of strategic planning, criticality analysis, FMEAs, RCAs? Is it helping? Is it hurting? Is it confusing the market?
Well, right now, I'll give you my opinion, and I'll tell you my boss would argue me a different direction, and some of my peers would stand with me, some would stand against me. It's okay. We're still so new in this that I think it's okay to have different opinions and tease this whole thing out.
Right.
But what I'm seeing is very similar to what we see with predictive technologies and other things, right? The challenge is, well, we've got maintenance problems. Well, what do we do about it? Well, I hear predictive technologies is great, right? Well, we just got to throw predictive technologies at it. So, but if you don't have a way to manage that data with your planning and scheduling, you can have the predictive technologies and still use it reactively and still waste a lot of money, right? Mm-hmm. So with that same type of context, right, we AI can take care of it, right? Well, okay, AI is going to get you something. But number one, is it right? Is it accurate? Is it good enough, to go? And so what, in my experience, what we've seen so far is that because everybody talks about it, we try and use it and we read through a couple lines like, oh, this is good. But then when you get into the details, it doesn't understand your operating context. It doesn't understand the nuances of your business, which would take, paragraphs and paragraphs and days. So if you want to, ask it to do something for you, you have to type it into a chat. Well, You better get ready and upload, a whole lot of business documents and context and everything else and the culture of your business, because it's going to give you something without all that context. And it might even tell you to change the belts on your production machine every 80,000 miles. And it's like, but my production machine doesn't drive.
Right.
I mean, 80,000 miles, what does that mean? So there is quite a bit of refinement that has to be done, even if that's the way that you choose to go.
Right.
But the other challenge I think we have with that is that, you know, while it can give you something, the more that we put our hands on it and touch it ourselves, the more familiar we are with it, the more it's ours, the more we believe in it, and the more we're actually going to do it. So at this point, if I were to do it, I would say, hey, just go put your hands on it, go do it, right? You'll get more out of it.
Right. There's no substitute for that.
Yeah. Bring your team in and build it together.
Excellent. Well, Brian, I really appreciate you being on the podcast today. I hope we get to talk again about some other elements of the strategic planning, like the RCAs. For anybody who wants to reach Brian, how can they get a hold of you?
Email, LinkedIn, so you can post those on the podcast if you like. So there's a few ways.
Brian, what can I say? Thank you for being here. And you talked about light bulb moments. I had about four or five myself. So I hope that works for our listeners too.
All right, good. So we're up to five lumens. this is a five lumen podcast. All right, good.
See, now I got this vision of those old stationary bikes in the science and industry museums where you pedal real hard and you get like five light bulbs over your head.
Yeah.
That's where we are. So
nice.
All right, awesome. Well, thanks, Brian. Hopefully talk again soon.
Thanks, Tom.